Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dota Underlords podcast. After many failed intros, my name is SunsFan, joined by Zeno and by our special guest of the day, Joel Larson. How are you, friend? Been a long time.
Fantastic. I'm in Barcelona. Gonna play a Magic tournament here, but then I'm back to Dota Underlords after that.
Good.
So doing pretty well. Yeah. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm just doing fabulous, you know. The game feels really good to play. I should probably mention that Swim, for people that are watching on video, he's not actually here. We'll be talking about why he's not here, but I did have to put a picture up because I never set up the overlays to fit three people. So it's just a laziness thing. So just an FYI. But yeah, the game has been a lot of fun since it. No, I would never be. I mean, come on. The game has been a lot of fun, which we can talk about in just a little bit. Zeno, would you like to start us off with some reviews before we actually get started?
Yeah, we had a little midweek mini cast, as it were, and I shamefully did not check our reviews, assuming that we got literally none, because of course that would be, you know, a decent assumption. And I was called out on Twitter afterwards because I was wrong. Corey, I'm very sorry. I told you I'd apologize. And here we are. Corey wrote us a very nice review saying that he loves this podcast almost as much as he loves Underlords, twice as much as he loves Artifact, and 20,000 times as much as he hates TFT. Right. Unfortunately, I'm not sure, because like TFT, if we're going on a scale, then it's in the negative, right? If he hates it. So 20,000 times a negative kind of seems like just a big negative. So I'm not sure if that's maybe just
Corey
maybe
really needs to check. I don't know. That's obviously NA math, if I've ever heard it. Joel, you've had.
Are you trying to metagame? Are you trying to metagame your own thinking, your own line?
Yeah, it's the struggle. And then we also had a very nice review from Eduardo, all the way from Brazil, saying nice show so far. Thank you, Eduardo.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
That's our first international review. I finally figured out how to check them. So if you guys want to review us, go ahead. Joel, you're in another country. Please review our podcast. Really appreciate it, friend. Really, really do. Okay. So
don't force me, Mel.
I know. I shouldn't have said that. First topic of discussion is the We Play tournament that's coming up. This is why Swim is not here right now. I didn't even ask why. He left early? I don't know why. Joel, do you have any idea why?
I have no clue. No.
Okay, so he went early. Swim's a weird guy. He makes weird decisions. So he went early for whatever reason. Joel and I will be going very shortly as well, which means next week we probably will not be having a podcast, but we'll see. But that tournament is in Ukraine, of course. The casters will be in Ukraine, but the players will be playing online. So if you watch the Artifact tournament, the Artifact tournaments that they did not so long ago, it's going to be pretty much a similar idea. Like super high quality. I don't know if I can talk about the theme yet, but I will be wearing a top hat, Joel. I reserved it. That's all that matters to me.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see the different sets, you know, the different costumes. I don't know what's going on, so it'll be a fun reveal.
I just knew that shit was going down when they asked me for my head measurements. Then I'm like, okay, we're going there. Okay. So, I was in the French mountains with my girlfriend and her friend. And then I had to find a tape measure in like a small store in some village to measure my head.
Well, the funny thing is, like our head measurement, what was your head measurement off the top of your head? Do you remember? It's like,
I can't remember, but big brain stuff.
Yeah. It's like, let's say 50 centimeters. So the first person to submit their head measurement was Swim, who put it in as like 27 centimeters. I'm like, dude, there's no fucking way your head is half my size.
That's like a puppy.
Yeah, that is like a little tiny baby, basically. So he had to redo it, and it turns out he has a bigger head than everybody else. So good to know. But the Underlords tournament is for $15,000. They're doing qualifiers right now, which there are a lot of people that signed up and then a lot of people that didn't show up. Have you guys been watching any of that, Zeno?
No, not really. I was actually just taking a look at the brackets just before this. It seems like they have like, it's like 512 people for both Europe and NA. So
holy,
they're going to
run
through a big gamut there. That's pretty crazy. So
the weird thing is that some people sign up to both. So no, if you stay up all day,
double the chances, I guess.
You can play in. But I was watching some streamers, and like the early rounds, a lot of buys, a lot of people didn't show up. And then the first few rounds are like super easy, like people that aren't even ranked, for example, like they haven't gotten ranked yet. But we'll see. I'm sure the lords of the world will make it in the end, most likely. So looking
probably,
forward to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of
which, what about that sidetrack that there's such a huge difference between the ranks and the lords? Have you thought about that?
I have not, but there does seem to be like, because just for all intents and purposes, I guess we can just say what we are. I'm Big Boss 4 currently, forever Big Boss 4. I will never get out of this hell, apparently. But I can,
yeah, I'm stuck like, when at I drop, five, so
yeah, five. I was stuck at 5 a couple times.
Joel, you're Lord now. Congratulations to you. Well
thank
done.
Thank you. I think I'm Lord 150 something.
Really? Okay, that's very good. But I can tell the difference between Big Boss 4 and 2, like, very easily. Like, those games
are super easy. It's huge, yeah, for sure.
Why, did you have thoughts on, like, how big of a difference are Lords in their ranks?
No, I think you're totally right. At first, I was, before it was way harder to get games at your level, when I was really trying to rank up into Lord, and now they've fixed that, but... At the first, I was kind of pissed that I always got these low-ranked games, but every time that happened, I think it was very easy to get top three, and most times you won anyways. I mean, I felt the difference by a wide margin, honestly. So I think that's interesting. I don't feel like that's really the same in many other games that I've... I mean, it's hard to succeed with a ranking system that reflects your play skill, I think, in games, and... Yeah, they do that like in chess, that's true, and then like StarCraft is also very like reflective of your play skill, maybe even Dota, honestly, but I mean I've seen so many games where it's like it's too much RNG that
the problem in Dota is when you get high enough MMR like there's just one guy that ruins it for you, so it is difficult,
right?
But it equalizes over time as long as you don't get that same guy in your team repeatedly, you know.
Now that
we're talking about ranks, I might as well discuss what you guys think the eventual rank should be like once season one starts. Like, how does it reset? What's the best way in your guys' mind?
I think a good way is to keep an amount of your MMR. And as the you can climb two ranks in one game. I don't know if you guys knew, but... So you keep an amount of your MMR. Maybe I begin in... I don't know, Enforcer 4 if I was Lord or, you know, whatever. So it's easier to climb back, but I think it should be reset to some level. I don't think I should start from scratch if I'm Lord top 100.
Yeah, I think the way they did that in like games like Overwatch that are more seasonal with the ranking system is, you know, you have your MMR type ranking. And then, you know, it's end of season, it kind of resets, but you still base around the same area. And then it's just like a multiplier for how much you go up and down in your placement games to start the season.
Exactly.
So they might do something like that. I kind of hope they redistribute the ranks. So like ranks lower than Big Boss and Lord actually matter a little bit, because it kind of feels like the game, like ranking wise, doesn't really start till you get to Lord right now, which is kind of like a weird... And I know, like, maybe there's people that are stuck at, you know, lower ranks or something that, you know, maybe there's a little bit more diversity there than I think about. But when you compare it to other games that Valve has done, like CS, there seems to be a lot more of an even distribution where you have people of all different sorts of ranks, you know. And right now it just feels like if you're not Big Boss 5 or Lord, it's kind of like that's kind of where you should be in the game. So I hope we see a little more variety of rank.
I mean, what do you mean with should be? I think it's really hard to get to Big Boss 5. I think that's a very select few. I mean, that's in comparison to how many players there are. I mean.
Right. I just think like when we started playing this game, it seemed like everyone would rapidly iterate through all of the ranks. And then you get to Big Boss and you kind of oscillate back and forth between, you know, Big Boss 1, Big Boss, whatever you would max out at, right? And so it just feels like everyone's filtering upward. There's not a lot of downward mobility. And then you just kind of get stuck at Big Boss and you're just trying to make it to Lord. And that's basically what If you're trying to grind out rank, like that's where the game really starts.
Yeah, I have experience from Magic and Magic Arena, and they literally have the same. And I think it's the same in Hearthstone too. Like, it's literally the same. It's very, I mean, some even in Hearthstone, you can, it's easy to have like a streak in going up ranks. So you go up multiple, like big boss 1, 2, 3 or whatever. But that's only applying on the lower levels. And then when you get higher, if you win one, you go up a rank. And if you lose one, you lose a rank. So it gets harder and harder until the, here it's Lord of the Spire. In Magic, it's called Mythic. In Hearthstone, it's called Legend. And they're all basically the same. Like, the highest ranks is, you know, a scoreboard or whatever of the top leaderboard.
I just want there to be more transparency on, maybe not what your MMR is specifically, but if, like, I want to know going into a game, I don't know if this creates more anxiety or not. I want to know going into a game, if I get top three, I'm going to rank up, or if I get X amount or lower, I will downrank. Because getting fourth place and downranking feels really bad. Really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I thought top four was the threshold, but apparently it's top three as far as I know. Top, like, I think fourth place lowers your MMR slightly depending on the, like, obviously the rank discrepancy in the game. Have you guys had experience with like fourth place not being where you want?
Oh, I've ranked down coming fourth place. Yeah. I definitely have experience.
Yeah, I don't know, not so much. I kind of feel like when I play, I either it's kind of like you finish top three or you have a horrible game and then you're scrambling to finish like sixth or something. So
okay. I think there should be one thing that I noticed that when you're trying to rank up to Lord, is that you're paired against other players based on your rank, as far as I've understood, but not MMR. And then when people get to Lord, they can't get kicked out of Lord, so they try all this weird shit. And right. Then their MMR goes down. So even if you play against a bunch of Lords, they can have really bad MMR, and then you don't increase your rank anyways. So I think that's an awkward part. I think it should be based on MMR and not rank, if that's what matters for ranking up.
Right. And that's how it is in Hearthstone as well. You make it to Legend, and then if you don't think you can make it to like top 10 or whatever the cool number would be, you just mess around and try new strats, right? Because you're playing against really good people, so you can actually test out stuff properly and not have to worry about skill discrepancy.
I think that's totally fine. Totally fine. And otherwise, it would be a lot of anxiety getting kicked out of Lord. However, I still think you should face players based on your MMR. So maybe you can play against boss players even if your MMR is that bad in Lord.
Big boss one, I mean, with a bunch of Lords that are low MMR. Sounds
yeah,
fine to me.
I mean, yeah. I honestly, yeah. Why not?
But then they'll try and then they'll stomp them. Then you feel bad, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just so weird to play. I played against like five Lord players, won, and didn't rank up. It was like, okay, you know. Yeah. Then you just, that's just weird.
All right, so let's talk about the update that just came out, which, of course, Zeno and I did a read-through of and our initial impressions. Arc Warden, of course, changed quite a bit. What do you guys think of the Arc Warden change specifically? We'll talk about Primordials after. Let's just, as the hero himself, just Arc Warden.
I think it's super interesting. I mean, it's totally different, right? And I think you can build strats with him in the way maybe you should, like make him kind of like a carry with items to deal a bunch of damage. I think there's tons of things to talk about. Either you can like put him in the back line and put like Daedalus on him, right? Mm-hmm. And have basically, so the new Arc Warden, for those who doesn't know, is his new spell cost 0, right? And he makes a copy of himself immediately. And whenever that copy dies, he makes another one. So as long as the main hero stays alive, he will make another copy. So either you can like double up on an item. He also has raised attack speed, so putting Daedalus on him is pretty powerful. Or you could have him like almost in the front, so he always makes the copy in the front, and that keeps on tanking. Mm-hmm. And then whenever that one dies, he makes another one. So that's another interesting way of looking at it. Say you have a mechanism in the front, and then he dies, makes another one, mechanism again, etc.
That's an interesting strat.
Yeah, I also think there's like some interesting things with him that are very unique to the new Arc Warden as far as positioning, because you do want to try and force the clone into positions where you want it to die first, obviously, and not have your your original take damage. So people have been trying to like corner it and sort of, you know, force the clones out in front so they die first. As you talked about, maybe, frontlining a little bit different too. That seems kind of fun.
We were talking about that, me and a few friends today. What happens if you put a literal box around him and have him in the middle? Say that you have 9 units and he's in the literal middle. Where is the clone? Like, does it come out in front? Like, that would be pretty insane. And there's just a lot of interesting things to do, and I think that's pretty cool.
What's the new... So the old Arc Warden, the two best items by far, not even close, I think we'll all agree, was Blink Dagger and Refresher, correct?
Correct.
What is now the best item, in your opinion? Obviously, it's a little early to maybe give a definite answer here.
I think it could
be... Is it DPS?
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Or anything. Go ahead.
I mean, that would be the easiest way to look at it, having DPS. He has increased attack speed. He's also a tier 4 unit, so deals more damage. And like having a Moon Shard or Maelstrom or Delos would be really good. The other way is you can abuse his like recreating the clone all the time. So having maybe a use item like Arcane Boots or Mechanism or whatever could also be good. What about having like double radiance? That would maybe be insane. Like, would that stack?
No, oh, okay. Stack.
But as someone pointed out in the chat, having Dagon could also be completely insane. Like, you kill 2 units immediately, he dies, kills another unit.
Right.
Yeah, that's probably the best item. If you do the tank strat, I think.
So, I talked to a dev, and I... All right, now that I'm saying this, I'm hoping this is going to be not a secret information. I think it's a bug, so they've been pretty transparent. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is fine. Right now, the Arc Warden clone is considered a spell, but that was a mistake. It's supposed to be a passive, which means right now you can silence him, and he can't create a clone. So putting Mask of Madness, for example, will prevent him from making a clone. But that will be changed. So Mask of Madness, in theory, I'm not saying it's the best item in the world, but that's something you can technically place on him in the future. So that could be pretty cool.
Kind of like Dragonite.
Yeah. Mask. Yeah, exactly. That's going to be exactly like that. But yeah, there's a lot of cool things you can do with Arc Warden. And have you guys really seen a lot of Arc Warden so far?
Nope. Not too much.
I honestly haven't played with the new patch yet. I just theorized about it since I'm in Barcelona.
Yeah, that's true. You're on vacation, enjoying life.
Yeah, kind of.
Typical magic player. Yeah. Typical artifact player.
Typical every game player.
Yeah,
whatever.
Pretty much. Okay, so that is the Arc Warden change. Font of Creation was also nerfed. They still have 20 armor, but the HP is a lot less now. But Primordials, that was changed drastically. Completely revamped the way it works. Now it's, 25% chance to lower the attack speed of the one attack by 50? Each singular attack?
Each attack, so they got slower and slower, and it stacks, right?
Does it?
No,
that's not my understanding. I could be wrong. I could be wrong about this
one. Yeah, it's kind of a weird one to read, right?
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
No, it's just I kind of thought when I read it was only for one attack, because like there's kind of this weird implication, and I'm going to look it up right now, like just to read it for the listeners too. Basically, how it reads is enemies attacking primordial units have a 25% chance to have their attack speed slowed by 50 each attack. The effect is applied at the start of the attack and lasts for the duration of the attack. So like that last line, like to me implies that it ends. Like the slow stops at the end of the attack, but I don't know, like practically speaking, how it actually plays out in game or what
maybe,
the intention was.
Maybe it works like Enchantress in Dota. You get to attack, like the animation's attack is slow, and then recharging the next attack is also slow, and then that kind of continues.
Maybe. Yeah, that's kind of the impression of how I thought it worked. Yeah. But
yeah, you can interpret that a lot of different ways. But either way, it's a lot worse, we can agree on, than the old Primordial, which was a casual 4-second disarm, aka basically a stun. Assassin players like myself were very, very sad about that. Are you guys I mean, this is now a new, like, Primordia is just like a side thing again, right? It had its
they also removed the range thing, right? They also removed the range attack.
Yes, I think so. Is that true?
Maybe not.
I was under the impression this now applies to all attacks.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I'm not 100% sure.
You're right, I think.
As you can tell, even though I've played a bunch of the patch, nobody goes Primordial, so it's hard to... I was playing against some guy 1v1 a bunch of times, and he had Primordials, and I had to literally pay attention to a specific unit just to see what happens. And it's not very noticeable, right?
Like, it's just like one attack in general. They're kind of hard to tell when they're on or off, just with the visuals in the game. But yeah, obviously, it got... Like, every aspect of the old Primordial build got nerfed pretty hard, other than Arc Warden just being played. You know, it's just a very different unit now, so it's different.
I mean, it totally makes sense, though. I mean, Tiny, probably still the best tier 1 unit and has been for, like, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
I mean, 1-cost unit. And then I think Morphling was in the top 3-cost unit with the last patch, because it's incredibly strong throughout the game. I mean, with the promoter buff, but also the change from 70 mana is like huge, and he does a lot of damage. And then clearly Arc Warden is busted, and I mean, Enigma, I mean, yeah. I still think that the promoter units will be good. I mean, they're all powerful units, right? Mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah, the units themselves are really good. I mean, it's kind of like the old Warlocks, right? The effect wasn't the greatest, the original Warlock buff, but the units are at God tier. And then we saw how amazing they can be with an actual good alliance, to the point where you have to change Enigma to the worst alliance in the game to make him balanced, right? That's pretty much what happened.
For sure.
So I know you've played a little bit more scrappy Inventors than I have, Joel. But they were obviously recently changed quite drastically, I would say. And in this very last patch, Clockwork got a pretty big buff where he was kind of underwhelming before, and Tinker got a little change as well. What are your thoughts on these guys?
Maybe last patch literally changed into 3-cost and didn't like change anything. So it's like his stun got faster, and then it was like still a 1-cost unit. Yeah. But I mean, it makes sense that it buffed Clockwork, and it was kind of hard to make... I went scrappy a few times when I got triple Bounty Hunter that I locked, and then nobody's ever going scrappies.
Exactly.
So that kind of worked, but it still took a lot for me to win with it. I think I went up to level 9, and I had to have a level 3 Tinker and a level 2 Tekkes, which, I mean, that's expensive. And I think I had Timber Soul level 3 and Clockwork level 3, so they definitely needed some buffs, I think. They also changed Tinker, right? So that you don't just front climb him.
Tinker's a little weird because, like, a level 3 Tinker, I don't know, is super viable. And it seems like they're trying to make level 3 Tinker. You think it's good?
It's insane. Yeah. I had a Void Zone on it, and it dealt 11k damage in my game.
Oh, wow. I had, like, the opposite experience where he got, like, one ult off, and then just because of positioning, he wasn't taking that much damage and wasn't getting enough mana to use the cooldown reduction.
You need CM, right? But you definitely need CM.
I did not have CM. I did not have CM. Crazy. I didn't have 3 mages.
Wow. All right. Well, maybe my positioning was just, like, horrible that time, or I effed it up. But it feels like it's still a decent frontline. Even early game, you can just throw like a level 1 Clockwork, level 1 whatever, like Timbrissa or Tinker, and like it functions. It's almost like a basic like level 2 warrior. You get 10 armor, you get like almost 1,000 hit points. Like if you're just not hitting rolls, that's kind of a nice way to just throw something out there to have.
It's kind of like the old Druids, right? With Treant, that they worked for a lot of time for little investment. But in the way that I meant that it changed him is they cut 5 of his armor, so you can't frontline him, went up from 10 to 5, and then they increased his attack speed and damage. So he will have an easier time gaining mana, even though he's not in the frontline. Because I don't think they want to... I mean, it's not meant for him to be a tank, I don't think.
He's a tank in Dota, though.
What?
A very elusive tank, if you think about it, because he can't be caught, right? That's his whole place now.
I mean, it's not even elusive in the way that he has some kind of evasion. He's just nobody can hit him.
He's elusive in the most annoying sense of the word. Absolutely. Lycan, right. This is one of the bigger changes in the patch. Of course, he was changed from a human warrior savage to a human hunter savage. Your guys' thoughts on this? I mean, hunters become better just because you can actually get six if you want. Because you don't. Medusa still feels horrible, by the way.
She also got buffed, though.
She did get buffed. She still feels pretty bad, though.
I think it's an enormous buff to. It's enormous to hunters. I think it's really big. Because, as you said before, there was only six hunters, so it's kind of hard to get. If you didn't get an early draw, it's very hard to pick her up late when you were level up, and you need to find a Medusa. And now there's an additional hunter, right? Second, the hunter buff seems pretty insane for Lycan, since he has a crit when he transforms, and when you get triple attack, when you hit the hunter trigger, that's pretty big. So he's going to deal a lot of damage.
Especially with Tooth and Claw, since that stacks additively.
Yeah.
Pretty disgusting.
Definitely. And if you run a three warrior lineup and hunters, you can do him with a Tusk. And having the Savage buff on fast attacking hunters, also very powerful. And then we have the last thing that I thought about was Fall from Grace with hunters. Becomes so much better. Because now it's easy to have Drow. You can play Drow, Pudge, Kanka, and Lycan in your lineup. And then you can even put in Tide as your preferred warrior to potentially have the skill buff. So having four undeads or heartless in your setup with hunters is, I think, very powerful. And before, that was really hard to get if you wanted a tanky frontline. You had to play like whatever, necrophos or something awful in that lineup.
I mean, I think so, going I think six hunters is probably still not the play, right? I think three or maybe four would be ideal. You think six hunters is good?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I think so.
Yeah. We'll see at the tournament,
Joel. I think
six
hunters can be strong, honestly. It's like, the hard thing with this meta in general is it's so much, like, it's kind of gone from, like, searching for those tier 5 units to now it's getting, like, 3-stars feel super powerful. So instead of going super hard on synergies, like, oh, I have to get six hunters, I have to have these, you know, perfect alliance compositions. It feels more like I'll roll, you know, when I hit 7 or 8, whatever, I'll try and get something to 3-star. You know, I'll try and start leveling up my units and then build around that versus the other way around.
Right. I think Hunter 600 can get a lot more viable with the like and change. I think that, as you said, the game goes a bit faster. And there's a couple of reasons for that, right? With the new change that you take more damage early, and also they nerfed a lot of the legendary units, it makes it so. So now it's actually way better to go for a mid-game oriented lineup that maybe goes up to 8, maybe 9. And also, given that you take more damage, because before you went for, like, you got really good at making a good early game lineup, and then you try to streak as long as possible while leveling up and going up to 50 gold, right? And then in the mid-game, you started taking damage, but that was fine as long as you got up to 9 and started coming in legendaries. But now they nerfed the legendaries. Firstly, they nerfed the legendaries. Second, you take more damage. So it's actually more important to roll even maybe at 7 or at 8 to take less damage. Because if you take more damage and you go below like 30 life, you will have to almost start panic rolling, right? So if you roll in the mid game, have a stabilized life total, and then go up to 8 or 9, you can decide when you should roll down below 50 gold way more safely than before.
It's taken a lot of getting used to for this patch as well, which I like.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a good change overall. And also, I think lastly, in the last patch, 5 legendary units were so important. But in the last metagame, I felt like a lot of the legendary units didn't even fit in most combinations. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, did you even want most of the 5 units in some of your combinations? No. I think I saw them sometimes and I just never bought them. I mean, Troll Warlord was really nice.
Troll's great. Techies is really good if you have a ton of Heartless. But I feel like getting level 2 on a lot of those units is kind of important.
Yeah, and it's also really hard, right? Because the games are faster.
Yeah.
You don't have that kind of same bank, and you can't spend that much resources either in life or gold either.
Like Enigma, before you get him for Warlock, obviously, and his ult was amazing. His both are changed now. He's a shaman, which is worse, and his ult level one is horrifically small AoE. You actually need him level two to be good, right? So that's kind of a huge issue.
Yeah, and I really like the change. And of course, it got really weird with Warden, since not only did he take more damage, but sometimes you played against an Arc Warden player and took like 30. You remember that Sunspan very well?
From I our had last Aegis, game. Thankfully. You know, best item in the game.
Oh, God. Here we go again.
I actually think Aegis is pretty good too. So I'll back up.
Yes! On that. Yes.
Two Aegis lovers. One.
No, podcast. But seriously, think about it, what I just said. I think it's very underestimated to sacrifice gold in the mid game to stabilize your life total, because that gold will be way more worth later, because you know when you have to roll down below 50 gold. So you will be safe for more turns and accumulate more gold. And if you have Aegis, you know when you take too much damage all of a sudden and die, and then you can roll down from 50 gold very easily. And that's worth a lot of money.
Yeah. I will admit, it's not as bad as I was giving Sunspan a hard time on previously. However, and this is just me being stubborn. One, I don't really like the item. Two, I don't like it just from a playstyle concept of picking something around losing instead of picking something to help you win. I think now that Primordials and Arc Warden have been changed, you have less rounds where you have to be afraid at 20, 25 health of instantly dying late game, whereas with the old patch you did, which kind of raised the value of Aegis a bit, because you just never knew when you would hit those crazy, you know, 30 damage rounds. But I do agree with you that removing the anxiety and therefore keeping your economy more healthy for longer is it's something that I probably underrated, to be honest, but I don't pick Aegis all often, to be honest.
Right. What if I was literally the same thing as you before, and I felt like, okay, this doesn't help me actually start winning more right now, and therefore that will not increase my scaling and snowballing potential. However, if I told you this will be worth 30 gold in the late game, would you take it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But because I feel like a lot of... I mean, it's random, of course, but sometimes you're at like 26 and then you take, I don't know, 18 and go down on a low life total, and then you can still be at 50 gold, and then next time you lose, you know, that's worth a lot of money, those one to, I don't know, many turns that...
Right.
Mm-hmm. You get those extra 5 money interest every because then maybe you'll win 4 rounds, right?
I mean, it also depends on
20 gold.
It depends on what items you're getting as well. Because I've said this before, even though I love Aegis, I'm not going to turn down a freaking summoning stone or tooth and claw for this thing, right?
Of course,
like, I'm talking about it happens every game to me. I get one just dumpster tier list with like tranquil boots, four staff, Aegis. Of course, I'm taking Aegis. It's so good compared to those items.
Yeah.
Come on. Not even close.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think it's the best tier 2 item by any means, but I see a lot of players saying they will never ever pick it, which I think is a super mistake.
Agreed.
And God, if you're comparing it to Summoning Stone, then of course I'm going to take Summoning Stone.
All right, let's talk about that. What do you guys think? Maybe is it better to talk about what we think should be nerfed or what we think is actually going to be nerfed? So give me a list of like items specifically, because I think Summoning Stone and Tooth and Claw are, like, as far as like early mid game items, like by far the best you can get. If you get Tooth and Claw, even if it's tier 1 right away, I'm going Savage 100%. It's happening.
Yeah, it's so good. It's hard for me because I love Savage already so much. So I go Savage even without the buff, I feel like, a lot of times. So
Savage is super strong right now in general, I think. So,
and with the addition of all the items,
man. Yeah,
has been for a long time. Yeah, I think that maybe Summoning Stone might be a little bit too good, but I mean the reason why it's so good is also the reason why I think it's like the best designed item in the game. So I'm kind of against nerfing it too much because I love those very general items that can work for so many different comps in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at first you look at it and you're like, oh, my Silverbear is stronger, or oh, my Druid stuff is, you know, treants and whatever. But it's so much more with like Arc Warden and Venom Wards and Lycan Wolves and, you know, whatever. And especially like potential new units that could be interesting with it. So I think it broadens the design space of how you make your comps. Like, it makes me play Furion over, I don't know, another druid a lot of the times.
That's literally the only reason to play Nature's Prophet.
That's correct, yeah.
He's still pretty awful. I do want to give a little shout out to my friend Venomancer, who I predicted would be good. And not only is he good, he is fucking incredibly good. You get him to level three, he's... Is there a better level three unit at a one cost? I don't think so. No, he has to be the best by far. He's going
to
get nerfed.
Yeah, if you don't compare him to like Anti-Mage with, you know, Bedfellows and stuff. But I think it's really good, yeah. But I think, why would it be nerfed? I think it's so interesting to have units that are so powerful at level three. So you can actually commit at rolling at like level seven to actually get him.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a good strategy. Yeah.
I've been consistently rolling a lot at seven now to get these level three units that are one cost. I don't want it to be nerfed. Also, I'm just saying, like, I think a lot of people think it's maybe too powerful at level three. That's a lot of people's opinions.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's as long as they keep the wards being not immune to magic, I think it's fine.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it's like such a power spike when you hit it around like round 20 or something like that. Sometimes people get it, and then all of a sudden you're going against these players and it's just like, holy crap, I can't deal with this, and it just annihilates you, especially with you know, Tooth and Claw or anything like that. But later game it does fall off them a little bit. So I've never really felt that it's that overpowered, and like, as you said, like the game, like the economy's completely changed. Like, before, you'd be like trying to hit 8 by 17, trying to hit like 9 by 21, just like taking as little damage as possible to get to level 9, roll for high units, whatever. Now it's like you're trying to hit 8 by 21. You're doing a little bit of rolling at 7 sometimes, like round 17 and 18-ish. So I do really like that there's more of a focus on the early mid game, because before it felt like you're kind of AFK playing until round 20, which is not a lot of fun.
I think that's great. I think it's great. It adds so much more depth to the game that you have actual decisions during the entire game instead of only in the late game.
Before, it felt like
game.
It was super cookie cutter, right? You could literally write a guide on how to play 90% of the games and you just follow those blueprints. And now you can't do that. It's great.
Can I just add something to that? That, like, have you felt like, I've never been so amazed by game and its patches than Dota Onlords. Can I just say that? Can I just throw it out there? I'm so impressed by like the changes they make and how like
The only update that's blown me away more was the 7.0 patch of Dota, which was like the biggest patch I think of any game I've ever seen, easily. So that's when they introduced like talents and stuff, like mind-blowing stuff from other games, basically. Underlords has been, it's consistently, I've been very excited with every patch. Obviously, the Arc Warden patch was, I liked everything going into that other than the Arc Warden stuff, obviously, with Primordials, but they ended up fixing that pretty fast, so I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's also they get so many things right, you know, that you think about, and then you're like, wow, they just actually changed that I've been thinking about for so long time. I mean, there's so many game developers that are so out of touch with their players, I feel like, that misses a lot of these things.
Well, you could even apply that to Valve previous to Underlords, right? Like, there's a lot of a sense from different communities that, you know, they weren't super receptive to a lot of ideas, and they just kind of did their own thing and they thought it would be good in the end, and you either liked it or you didn't. So I think everyone's just happy to see, one, they're iterating through things super fast, like you're getting new patches with a lot of new content every week, and two, it seems like they are you know, keeping more of an open ear to the community and their ideas. So that's just,
I
really
mean, it feels like an actual beta, right? I mean, in these days, people have a beta for what, 2 years? Okay, is the game gonna come out? I don't know. You know, and now nothing ever changes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it actually feels like a beta where things are happening. So it's
all right. The final thing of the patch that I want to discuss, I know it doesn't seem like a big thing, but I want this unit to be good. It's Juggernaut. He got buffed.
Oh.
So his minimum maximum damage went up a bit. I wouldn't say it's anything crazy. The big deal, though, in my opinion, is the attack speed. It stays the same at level 1, which is 0.91, but it scales up. So level 2, you get 1.0, and level 3 is 1.25, which is huge, by the way. Is this unit ever going to be viable in this game?
I honestly were thinking the opposite thing, that I was like, oh, Juggernaut, finally enough that, you know, we have been talking in our, you know, deep hatred for Juggernaut. And,
yeah, we have.
And I was, finally, there's an update, and I just felt like it wasn't enough. That's my initial feeling.
Yeah. I haven't seen Juggernaut run in like a good lineup in forever. That hasn't changed with this patch. It doesn't seem very good because at level 1 it's still really weak. So I think it needs a little more of a buff.
But this is, I was telling Xeno this as well, Joel. You've been around Dota as well. When they come out with these kind of micro buffs, if you will, if this happens another time or even two more times, he will be really strong. And I think he's going to get to that point eventually.
Yeah, or at least viable, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I missed the days of level 3 Jug being something to fear. You know, level 3 Jug and auto chest was insane.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you had him in your mage lineup and you just tanked everything and it dealt so much damage.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, speaking of rank or 2 cost warriors, have you ever had the pleasure of playing a lot of Slardar lately?
I always end up selling him, so no, not really.
I think Slardar is good. Literally amazing right now. I honestly think so. I have you had him at 3-star?
No. I've seen games though where, like, honestly, even sometimes people will put like Mask of Madness and Slardar.
Yes. No, that's a mistake though.
Oh, all right.
I've been doing a lot of 3-star Slardar, and do you know how much damage deals? I think it's like 270 or something. Like something absurd, you know. Very high. And then he literally doesn't have a cooldown on his spell. So when it gets to the late game, if you put an attack speed item on it, and this will sound weird, but I've been putting Moonshard on him a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And in the late game, he Sunder Armors or whatever it's called, about like 5 units. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Corrosive Haze. And like minus what, 45 armor?
Yeah, his spell is absurd. Yeah, it's just I just hate he sometimes puts it on heroes that are literally about to die. I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Honestly,
but that's before that was way worse though in Dota Auto Chess. That was
AI was unbearable in freaking Auto Chess, no doubt.
That still happens sometimes, but I feel like that's a lot better.
So well, the cool thing about Slardar is no one else is buying him, so you can 3-star him for the moment, and he's a scaled unit, which means if you put him next to Tidehunter, that's you got scaled warriors, so not too shabby.
Exactly. Those go so well together. And I mean, even if the late game where people have, like, you know, warlocks, 2 warlocks, 4 warlocks, or whatever, which happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, who cares about them gaining life when they have minus 45 armor? I mean, what, the Heartless buff is 5 armor minus, which is how much? 20% damage or whatever? I mean, what's minus 45? You just one hit them. Yeah. All right. My boy, Slardar. We've been having some fun.
I'll try to 3-star him today just for you, Joel.
I mean, it works well with the rolling tactic too, right? That you roll earlier, so it's way easier to get.
Mm-hmm. Before we we jump out of the patch talk, I want to jump back in time a little bit to a previous patch where they made all the changes to global alliance items. I'm kind of curious, one, how you guys feel about it now that you've had a chance to sort of play Underlords, you know, with the 1-3 star, you know, different tier alliance global items. And after that, I want to throw out a proposition, maybe for a little tweak on that, because I still struggle with this from a game design standpoint a little bit. So I'll spoil it. I'm not necessarily a huge fan now that I've actually gotten to play through it a bit, but I'm kind of curious how you guys, do you like the change, not like the change? How do you feel about it so far?
I think I'm kind of torn about it. In some ways, I feel like you're sometimes picking an item that you hope will be good and then it's kind of useless later, or that you'll be forced into playing that once you pick that up because it might be so good. However, I also feel like it's a way to make other combinations or synergies more playable in a metagame where they're not that good, which is the part I really like. Like, for example, Bedfellows or Brawny, for example, can get absurd, mm-hmm. while those synergies are not very good otherwise. So I feel like that's like a way to get a more diverse metagame and setups into the game. But I also heavily dislike that sometimes they're just useless, or you get some of them that you will just never pick, or that you try to go for something when you get it. And maybe that's, you should be rightfully punished, but, you know, it's kind of a feel bad.
I actually like the, sometimes when I feel lost, like I don't know what I want to do. I know this is maybe not for a pro player's perspective, but from a casual perspective, maybe. And I see an item like, oh, the game is, I wouldn't say it's forcing me, but it's nudging me in a direction that I can now change to actually fit this item specifically, like Tooth and Claw, for example, or Summoning Stone or something to that degree, when it's a really good item like that. And I've talked about global items. I'm just a huge fan of them in general. But in terms of being changed from tier one, tier two, tier three, I think it forces less strategies, honestly, because now I can just play my game and I'm like, hey, if I'm playing, like, let's say the Savage and I miss out on the tier one, it doesn't mean I'm going to miss out on it later. So I shouldn't just like completely dumpster my lineup. I should just go with what the game is giving me. And I have hope that I could find this item in the future as well, which I'm not, maybe not. I think overall it makes people less dependent on the global items for their alliances.
That's completely true. I think the new tier that you get different tiers in global items is fantastic change. I think it makes it a lot more deep with the global items that, as you said, you can get a high rank of it later. But also, it's happened to me that, I mean, when the game starts, right, every player gets a random set of all these global items that, okay, Sunsven, you get a tier 1 Eidolon or Font of Creation or whatever it's called, and you get level 2 Savage buff or whatever, and then you get random in that bag of global items, if you know what I mean. Like, if you pick a tier 1 Eidolon or Font of Creation, you won't get it later, and that's predetermined when the game starts. Mm-hmm. However, you can get the same rank of the same item again. Have you ever had that happen to you? Because I've proposed or forced a creep round loss to get Font of Creation again, which has happened. And that's, I think that's like an amazing next level of that too. So.
I know
with the new tier thing, I really like it.
Yeah, so when the patch originally came out, I thought that people might try doing that, and it ends up being true. I know a lot of people do not like that because that's, you're literally losing to benefit you. I have no problem with it. I think it's kind of cool. It's a cool little niche thing because it's a roll of the dice, right? It's not like you're guaranteed to get this freaking item. There's so many other items of that tier that you could get, and it could just be, you could be screwing yourself by losing still, right? You're taking the roll of the die, which for a game like this, it makes sense, honestly. All right, Zeno, let's hear your suggestion.
All right. So I think I really like the changes as far as distribution of global alliances throughout the game. Like changing into the tiers, like we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but like before, you know, there's maybe only like three available at level or tier one. And then on the opposite end, you know, then it went to like 7 tier 2, 10 tier 3. So then you have it super weighted towards tier 3 items, which I didn't really like. So like the fact that you can get all these different kinds of global alliance items earlier and sort of spread them out throughout the game at different power levels, I think is cool. There's like a little bit of this factor of just like, it's kind of like if you just RNG hit something sometimes with like the new global alliances, like it takes, like, I think like what was so fun about auto chess is you're constantly playing the probabilities and you're just trying to adapt your lineup to whatever the game gives you and whatever that happens to be, that's cool. But there are certain global alliance items that are so powerful that they make you toss like everything out the window and you're like, all right, well, I'm going. You know, whatever, Savages, because I happened to hit, you know, Tooth and Claw level 2 at round 3 or whatever. And I think to like a certain degree, that's like a little weird. So I have a couple ideas I just want to throw out there. These might be garbage, but that's okay.
Looking forward to it.
A small idea would be to give you the tier list of all the items at the beginning of the game. So you know which ones are ranked which level. now that that takes away some of the mystery. But then you can kind of take a look at this and be like, oh, I have these things that are going to be available to me, you know, rounds 15 through 25 or whatever it happens to be, and sort of play around them a little bit more than just not knowing any of the information. So I thought maybe that would be kind of a fun way, because then you can sort of start to adapt a little bit your builds, but not just like just be praying for like an RNG, you know, three star tooth and claw, or, you know, whatever the heck you happen to want. It allows a little bit more planning. So that's idea number one.
All right. Get our thoughts here. I thought this as well. I don't like it because I think it forces strats more. If I see a savage, the tooth and claw, like level three or whatever, I'm forcing savage 100% this game, even if I never get the item. That may be just a personal thing. Yeah. I don't know if that's actually what everybody.
I also think there's a weird. I also dislike it, honestly. I also feel like it's weird because this might be a weird reason, but I don't want to have to take like a snippet of, you know, the screen of which it, whatever tier is coming up in the beginning. And I don't want to have to go back and look how I should redistribute my place or whatever.
Big nerf to mobile players is what you're saying.
I mean, honestly, it just adds another annoying element in my mind.
Okay.
I feel like it disrupts the flow of the game.
We'll throw that one in the trash can. That's fine. all right. Number two is we randomly distribute all the global alliances, you know, tier one through three as far as where they show up item-wise. But they don't have any variable change. Like, they're not one through three stars. They're all the same. And they level based off of the level of the unit that they're applying to. So if you have like a three star axe with Brawny, it would get, you know, plus 75 per whatever health per kill, you know, or whatever. It would just scale, you know, with the unit tier or unit stars instead of scaling just based off of RNG. So that's my one other thing I'd throw out there that might be a way to.
That's an interesting one. I think it changes a lot, though, because then you have to nerf level three units. I'm not going to say it's a bad idea. It's one that changes a lot.
Definitely changes.
It makes rolling a lot better
at this point.
It makes rolling a lot better. Right away.
Yeah,
that's for sure. No, that's right. Interesting. I think that's interesting.
So let's wrap this episode up with, I guess, Joel's thoughts on the game as a whole. And what you're excited for, or what you're not so excited for, your the future of the game, essentially.
Well, I mean, I like it a lot. I mean, I play it so much. Honestly, I feel like the gaming industry has been looking for a new genre ever since Battle Royale games, and this is it. Mm-hmm. And it really fits me as well. I mean, it has a little bit of magic in it. It has a little bit of like old tower defense stuff, and you know, it's just a lot of strategy, and it's fun. And it's one of the few games that have kept me playing for like 8 hours, and the time, you know, the time just flies, and that hasn't happened for a while for me. So I'm very excited. What I've been thinking about, which is maybe not the future of the game, but okay, have you guys ever played card games? Like any
Artifact? Woo!
Yeah. I used to play some Magic back in the day.
Okay, so. If we take the Artifact reference of Stars Align, you know, gain three mana. Yeah. So basically, instant mana and ramp, which was always a problem in Artifact. Same with Magic, Dark Ritual, and fast mana, etc. And you see where I'm getting here. I'm getting towards Crystal Maiden. I think Crystal Maiden enables a lot of fun strategies, and she's very fun to play with. But I think she's always going to be a design problem for the game. Mm-hmm. Like, gaining mana is too powerful that much, and I don't know, isn't it, you have to change Crystal Maiden in some way, and it's weird to change her aura because that's so, you know, in because that's how it works in Dota, so it's weird to change that, but I feel like you need to think about Crystal Maiden then in the future.
I was actually thinking about this as well, because I think that she will get nerfed in some way. And I'm hoping that it's not like just a plain reduction in the mana per second. What if they increase? So right now it reads, what is it, like 14 mana every 2 seconds. What if you change it to every 3 seconds or every 4 seconds? So if she dies, that's a lot of mana left on the table versus now where it's every 2 seconds you're ticking mana. You know what I mean? Would that be an interesting way to potentially nerf her? She has to stay alive.
Right.
I mean, she kind of is because she's in the corner, but I don't know. Just an idea.
I was talking to you about this earlier also, and it doesn't really work well with the aura being the same as in Dota, but I thought it would be interesting that you gain mana for every attack that she hits. That she's kind of like another unit, but instead of only giving mana to herself, she gives to everyone. So then you can also apply stuff like Mask of Madness and stuff like that. You can actually...
That
would be cool. Yeah.
I like that.
You can actually make it into like a carry support or whatever.
And it gives you a reason to like put a wide variety of different items on her too, right?
Yeah.
So
no, for sure.
I think that would be a lot more fun.
I like it. Very nice. You should email Valve with that idea.
I mean, friend. I assume they're listening now.
Yes, definitely. We're the only podcast for Underlords. So we'll see. Okay. So that brings the episode to a closing. Joel, thank you for coming on during your vacation. I know you're a very busy boy trying to relax.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate having you and you coming on and whatnot. Swim, we'd like to thank you for coming on as well with your beautiful picture. Thanks for showing up, buddy. Zeno, any last words?
No, look forward to watching you guys cast some Underlords coming up pretty quick.
Excellent. And you, Joel, any last words? Before I see you in Ukraine?
I mean, first time in Ukraine. That's going to be awesome. Just thanks for having me. I had so much fun discussing these things. There's so much to talk about with Underlords, so I'm glad to have the opportunity to do it.
All right, cool.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
All right, guys, thanks for watching. And, of course, if you're listening, you already know this, but if you're watching on YouTube for Dota Cinema's channel, you can find all the audio-related stuff on sunsfan.gg/podcast. Until next time, Suns fan, Joel, Swim, kind of, and Zeno signing out. Goodbye.